Hi, thanks for tuning in to the August 4th, 2013 Armed American Radio podcast version. Due to some technical problems we had last night resulting in some loop back, in other words, some violent echoes, we were unable to run the live show last night after the first hour. So what you're going to get here is an encore presentation of last week's incredible interview with George Zimmerman's brother, Robert Zimmerman. Enjoy the podcast. If you've heard it before, enjoy it a second time. If you haven't, enjoy it the first time. It's great stuff. And keep in mind, my new book, Lessons from Unarmed America, co-written with the great Rob Pincus, and the foreword written by rock and roll legend Ted Nugent, is available now on Amazon.com, on Kindle, or in print. Head over and pick up a copy for yourselves, and I'll see you on the radio.
Prescription for freedom and giving you a voice every week. This is Armed American Radio, coming to you from the Crossbreed Holster Studios. Now, here's Mark Walters.
Welcome to the Crossbreed Holster Studios, America, live coast to coast from the toasty beaches of South Florida to the crab fishing vessels of Alaska and all points in between, including parts unknown. You are listening to the nation's largest pro-gun, pro-self-defense radio program in America, where I fill your prescription for freedom every week here on the Armed American Radio Network. And today is a special show. Those of you who listen to the program regularly know that for 17 months, I refused to discuss the Zimmerman case, simply because, unlike Al Sharpton and apparently President Obama and Jesse Jackson, I wasn't there. And I felt it quite irresponsible to discuss the case when so much mistruth maybe? Lies maybe? Were flying around. The media was doing what the media does, giving you misinformation, conjecture, and nothing based in fact. As a result, I refused to talk about the case. And I told you that when the facts came out, that together we would assemble a panel of self-defense experts and we would discuss it. And we did just that. And this week, here in the Crossbreed Holster Studios, I'm proud to tell you that I have George Zimmerman's brother, Robert Zimmerman, here in the Crossbreed Holster Studios with me today. And we're going to have a conversation with Robert. And I'm going to allow you to hear. It's not going to be a bullet point interview. Question after question after question, but more a conversation, where we're going to allow Robert Zimmerman to talk about his family and the things that they face and that his brother faces and that he faces and his mother and father. You know, he has a mother and father, too. So let's get right to it. Let me introduce to you Robert Zimmerman. Robert, welcome to the Crossbreed Holster Studios. A real pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's been a wild ride, hasn't it?
Yeah, wild is an understatement, but definitely, yeah.
And I also want to mention that we have your attorney here as well, sitting to your left, and that's Jeff Dowdy. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having us tonight.
And you.
Very, very thankful.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you guys here, and I'm proud to be able to bring your voice to America's airwaves today. Certainly not your first interview, not your first rodeo. You've done a lot of them. You do television. You do great television work. I've listened to a number of your interviews. One of the things that concerned me about the line of questions that you've gotten post-verdict has been the challenge afterwards. People tend to want to challenge you.
Right.
What people don't accept is the fact that the Florida courts have spoken, a verdict has been rendered, and under Florida law, a law that I'm very familiar with as a former resident of Florida, your brother was found not guilty.
Correct.
The challenge part, how do you handle that? When somebody says to you, yeah, but, and they're working off of emotion and not fact.
Well, there's really two sides to that coin. I think the first is that the goalposts keep moving before people were clamoring for charges to be filed, for an arrest to happen, despite there not being probable cause of any crime. They just wanted an arrest. Later, they got the arrest, and they wanted George Zimmerman, according to the Martin family attorneys, to have his fair day in court. And that's all they wanted. You know, then he had his fair day in court, and they called upon all of us to respect the verdict. And so did we. So did our family. Then the verdict came, and it seems it's not the verdict they like. So now the goalposts move again.
So the verdict's not being respected.
Right, obviously, yeah. Okay. I don't think so.
You have we don't hear a lot about your family, and I want to start from that position. I want people to feel and get to understand and get to know George a little bit. We hear a lot about Trayvon Martin's mother.
Mm-hmm.
The news is covering the Martin family, of course. The media is doing what the media is doing, and we'll go to that in just a little bit. You have a mother. George Zimmerman has a mother. And I don't hear your mother's voice out there that often. How is your family standing up to this incredible attack from the media, this unprecedented attack?
I think there's a couple of reasons. In the beginning, there was an unfortunate vacuum. I think people should have heard from my parents or myself or maybe even George. But there were serious safety and security concerns, very serious concerns in the beginning. We vanished off of the face of the earth. All of us were displaced. All of us were in different stages of homelessness or hiding. And we moved many, many times. So that was what prevented us from kind of approaching the world in the beginning and rebutting some of these assertions that were being presented as fact. There's also health concerns. Our dad had just recovered from a heart attack. My mom takes care of her mother who has Alzheimer's. Getting their faces out there in the public was not in their best interest because it would end, in effect, any semblance of privacy that they had. And that's why I decided that it looks like I'm standing up for my brother. In a way, I certainly am. But at the time, the decision was to just stand up for the truth because George had told us all the truth, and he had told us all individually exactly what had happened. And truth is only defined in one way in our family. So people have heard from our parents now. They also have remorse at what happened, ultimately, that a life was lost. But they have serious considerations about their future that they have to take into account whenever they think about engaging any kind of media.
How old are your parents, if you don't mind my asking?
They're in their 60s.
Okay. Yeah, this is very rough. This has got to be very difficult. Let me go back. You mentioned about George telling the truth.
Right.
Was there ever any question in your mind, as a family, as a brother? Now, you're his older brother.
Correct.
Was there ever any doubt in your mind as to the story he was telling you?
Absolutely none whatsoever.
You didn't question anything?
Absolutely none. The only question in my mind was that the idea that he was so brutally attacked, it didn't sit well with me. You know, I wished at the end of the day he did what he did to save his life. But I always wondered, you know, why was the attack so prolonged? You know, this is before we heard the 911 calls, before we heard him screaming, before we saw any photographs, before this was a case. This was just a brother recounting to me, my only brother, look, this is what happened, and this is how it happened. So there wasn't evidence, there wasn't proof, there was no court case. There was just a profoundly sad story that he recounted. And I think that unless you've heard him recount that story as a family member, you miss some of his sorrow, the pain that he had, the way that he was different after this. I had seen him a few days before that when our father was discharged from the hospital in Florida, and he just was not the same. So there was no question in my mind he was telling the truth because, like I said before, truth is a central core value in our family. We don't have variations on how we define truth. Truth is truth, period.
Were there tears during that discussion?
There were when I thought that when my sister called me first and said that someone had died. And I said, you know, our dad and our grandma had been in the hospital. I thought it was one of them and was very concerned about that. But she said, no, it's not what you think. This has to do with George. So when he actually told me what happened, my sister had asked me, don't prompt him so much for details. Let him kind of get this off his chest on his own terms. It's very traumatic for him. He's really not himself. Let him just say what he has to say, and details will be forthcoming.
How did you get a phone call from him? I mean, how did all this come about? You got a phone call and said, you're not going to believe what happened. I mean, tell us how that happened.
Right. First, from my little sister. I was, you know, doing dishes and stopped what I was doing and heard someone had died and just told her, you know, please don't beat around the bush with me. If there's something I need to know, tell me.
Okay.
And she said that there had been some kind of event where someone had died, and I thought it was our family.
Right, of course. Okay.
Yeah, and then George called the next day, and he said, he told his story. He told me exactly what had happened.
Okay, now he didn't lawyer up. Jeff, let me go to you for just a second. He didn't lawyer up.
No, absolutely not. He cooperated with the police from the get-go. The moments right after the incident, he told the police everything that happened and continued to cooperate.
Smart move on his part? I mean, I know we're looking about this in hindsight, but is this advice you would give to somebody today in a situation like that where there was a shooting involved and somebody had passed away? When somebody, you want them to talk to the police without an attorney right out of the gate?
Well, typically not. You do not. But in this scenario, what Robert was just reiterating was that George didn't feel he did anything wrong.
Right.
He was acting in self-defense. He's a law-abiding citizen, and he cooperated with the police from the get-go. He went there the next day, walked them through it all.
I've seen those videos, right. And I believe, Robert, I believe, and we have about 30 seconds before we get ready to take a break here. So what I'll do is I'll set this question up for you, and then when we come back from the break, you can answer it. I've seen those videos, and I think a lot of people who are looking at this case from an outside perspective probably haven't seen those videos.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They probably didn't listen to the evidence. They're listening to the mainstream media. They're being fed a boatload of lies, conjecture, and garbage. They refuse to accept the verdict, and in most cases, many of these people who are operating on emotion and not fact will never accept the verdict, regardless of the facts. And I'd like to get your comments on emotion versus fact when we come back from this break.
Great.
This
Great.
Is Armed American Radio, live in the mobile Crossbreed Holster Studios. I'm Mark Walters, back after this with Robert Zimmerman.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tim Schmidt, founder of the United States Concealed Carry Association. Every week, Mark talks about the attacks on our Second Amendment from anti-gun politicians across America, and we talk about what's being done to preserve and protect freedom. The National Rifle Association, America's oldest civil rights organization, is the leader in preserving the Second Amendment. Because of NRA's 4 million members, the National Rifle Association's grassroots advocacy is the nation's most successful. Imagine what we could accomplish with more members like you to join the fight. That's why you need to be a member. Sign up today. There's no excuse. Help fight for our freedom. Join NRA and learn all about NRA Institute for Legislative Action's efforts to make sure American gun laws work for you. I'm a life member, and it's one of the most important things I ever did. Call 800-672-3888 or sign up online at www.membership.nrahq.org.
Carrying spare magazines is always a great idea. The Crossbreed holster outside the waistband mag carrier is the most comfortable OWB rig on the market today. The Crossbreed mag carrier provides great retention and a high ride, enabling total concealment and immediate access under only a light cover garment. Available for single or dual magazines, these incredibly comfortable magazine carriers may just save your life one day. Crossbreed holsters, often imitated but never duplicated. To order your Crossbreed mag carrier, visit crossbreedholsters.com. That's crossbreedholsters.com.
The new Tac Slide by Galco Gun Leather combines steer hide and kydex together for a fast, concealable, and economical holster design. The Tac Slide mates a kydex holster pocket to a slotted steer hide backplate with an open top and neutral cant to provide the fast and smooth draw. With 1 3/4 belt slots, the Tac Slide is worn close to the body for maximum concealment and comfort for under $40. Visit usgalco.com today. That's usgalco.com.
North American Arms offers the most popular mini revolvers ever produced. Chambered in 22 short, 22 long rifle, and 22 magnum, the North American Arms mini revolvers are the standard by which all other mini revolvers are judged. These incredibly small and compact revolvers offer 5-shot capacity in your pocket when the chips are down and your life is on the line. The 22 long rifle can also be ordered with a holster grip. For more information on these incredible mini revolvers, please visit NorthAmericanArms.com. That's NorthAmericanArms.com.
The night. We may not own it, but we control it through silence. From Allegiance Ammunition comes the Silent Strike, the world's only 223 subsonic round that fully functions the M4, the AR-15, and the HNK-416. No more having to single stroke your AR-15 when firing subsonic rounds. Allegiance Ammunition has created astonishing stealth and maximum performance in a silent package. Visit AllegianceAmmunition.com. That's AllegianceAmmunition.com.
The Ruger American Rifle is a 100% American-made firearm that offers outstanding performance at a great price. Available in standard size and compact models, it features power bedding integral bedding blocks, a Ruger Marksman adjustable trigger, a flush-fit four-round rotary magazine, and a three-lug bolt with 70-degree throw. Compact models feature a shorter length of pull and a shorter barrel for a reduction in overall length of more than 5 inches. The Ruger American Rifle, another rugged and reliable firearm from Ruger.
The Magnum Research Baby Desert Eagle family of handguns. Excellent handgun protection with plenty of firepower. With a crisp double-action, single-action trigger pull. And available in 9mm, 40 Smith & Wesson, and 45 ACP. The Baby Desert Eagle handgun line comes in several barrel lengths. And your pick of steel or polymer frame. All models come with slide-mounted decocking safety, upgraded fixed combat sights, and several models feature tactical rails. Visit MagnumResearch.com or your local dealer today.
This is Armed American Radio. We are your voice. Hear previous broadcasts of Armed American Radio and join the blog discussion at armedamericanradio.com or on Facebook at Armed American Radio.
Welcome back to the Armed American Radio Network live in the mobile Crossbreed Holster Studios. I'm live in the studio today with George Zimmerman's brother, older brother Robert Zimmerman, and his attorney, Robert, welcome back to the studio. Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks.
And Jeff Dowdy,
yes,
your attorney over here off to your left, and we're going to have a continuing great discussion here. A lot of areas we want to cover with you, and like I say, week after week, I wish you could hear the conversation in between the breaks a lot of times. It's fascinating, but it will lead us into this portion of the conversation. Next, I'll just turn the mic over to you.
Okay.
And let you pick up from where we left off.
Well, you were talking about some of the mythology versus some of the fact and how that tends to elicit an emotional response when you pay attention to the mythology versus when you analyze fact. There's a saying in the news, if it bleeds, it leads, if it burns, it earns. And that's why the news these days is written with that kind of emotional hook to get people to tune in or read or log in or what have you. I think that one of the things about this verdict that struck me is that everyone was kind of waiting for the verdict, but I doubt that the number of people who were waiting with a verdict, with the intense interest they had in the outcome, actually paid attention to the process.
Mm-hmm.
We have a judicial system. We don't have a judicial answer in this country. So if you don't examine the evidence, if you don't follow the case, if you don't read some of the transcripts or look at some of the exhibits and do some of your own independent research before, during, and after, you just hear those two words, not guilty, and it may not make sense. But I would encourage people who are disturbed by the verdict or don't understand it to look back, to re-examine the actual process, not just in this case, but in every case, and to understand that court in our society is like a filter. It filters out mythology. It only admits truth. And it's the best system in the world for filtering out mythology and admitting truth.
Do you mean that we shouldn't base a jury verdict, Jeff, I'll turn this to you, on our feelings about something?
Well, you have to follow the law. That's what the jurors are supposed to do.
I've heard a lot about that, and I've heard a lot of jurors out there just recently talking about how, and I quote, we believed George Zimmerman got away with murder, and then in the same breath, but the facts didn't show us that, and it couldn't be proven, so we had to find him not guilty. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you trying to say here? Is that an emotional response from a juror who renders a verdict and then after the fact?
That's a juror who, while I was in the jury room, followed Florida law.
Thank you.
And that's what the jurors have to do. Set aside all your emotions, leave them at the door, go in there and follow the law. And that's what that juror did. He was clearly not guilty, and that's what she did. She followed the law. She might have having some remorse, but she knows in her heart she followed the law, because if she would have found him guilty, or she would have hung out, but she didn't do that. She followed the law, and that's why George was not guilty.
Let's go back to the beginnings of this, Robert, with mm-hmm. you and how this story you were telling us about getting a phone call from your sister and finding out there was a death. That's a tough enough phone call to get, and then to find out your brother was involved in a self-defense scenario like this. You knew your brother had a concealed carry permit, I'm sure. You knew your brother carried a firearm.
Sure.
Any training? Did he take any training that you're aware of?
George, Florida law requires a class that trains you how to safely carry and when and only when to discharge your weapon, which is also part of some of the mythology out there.
It is, isn't it? And I want to get to Florida law with you in just a few minutes, a little bit of a leading question there. Back to you finding out what happened here. When the initial news reports, when the news first picked this up, and you saw this beginning to explode, what the hell was going through your family's head?
That there were three key terms that the media was repeating over and over and over again to get traction with this story. And they were repeating not just these three terms, but they were acting with incompetence because the people they were obtaining their information from, the lawyers for Trayvon Martin's family, had a financial interest in shaping this narrative. And those three terms were white, black, and gated community. In every story, in every headline, whether it was, and then it evolved to white self-appointed neighborhood watchman or white vigilante, you know, shoots black child or black unarmed teen in gated community, in middle-class gated community. So there were, there was a race angle, there was the weapons angle, and then it evolved into the socioeconomic angle, tying in that word gated to kind of elicit again some of those feelings as to why would this happen in a gated community.
Tell us about the community that George lived in over there. I assume he doesn't live there anymore. Tell us about that community. It's a very diverse community.
It is a very diverse community, and I think that some people are not really aware of some of the crime statistics. But crime statistics can be a little bit misleading because you actually have to apprehend a suspect, charge them, and then get a conviction, then you have a statistic for something that happened there. One of the things that's kind of disturbing about that community is, at least to me, it's a little unreal. That community had about 200 occupied homes or families in it, thereabouts. And in 1 year, they called the police, in 13 months more precisely, 400 times. So that means that everyone that lived there, regardless of their race or regardless of any of their ideologies, felt the need on average to call the police at least twice.
Right now, the media meme here is that your brother was the one making all of these calls to the police because he was a, quote, wannabe cop.
Right.
What you're telling my audience right now is that residents called the police
residents
in this neighborhood over 400 times.
In 13 months, That's pretty alarming, and the residents also were the ones who voted as to who should be their liaison, you know, with the police department in Sanford and who should be their neighborhood watch leader. And they voted for George. There is no self-appointment there.
Okay, I think that's an important. I'm going to go with you on this one, Jeff. That's very important. I don't think the people out there are getting the facts.
No.
George is a wannabe cop. George is a wannabe cop. People don't understand that he was, in fact, elected. Is elected the right word?
I think so. I mean, it was they voted.
Well, yeah, he's chosen at a homeowners association.
So he attended a homeowners association. So your brother was active in the homeowners association. He actually cared about where he lived.
Right.
Wow. When did that become un-American? I have to ask that. You know, he's attended more homeowners association meetings than I have in my neighborhood. I can tell you that. And my community's not gated. I don't know what that says about me as far as the media is concerned. But let's go back to he attended the homeowners meeting. I assume he attended several homeowners meetings.
He did. And he was asked to be part of this. And it was the word wannabe cop really irks me because it's just a label that just was used to inflame everything, especially used by the prosecutor in this case. And I won't go up to speed to the trial, but when they use that word, wannabe cop, it's really derogatory because all it does is inflame the jury. And we had a call the other night on a radio station from a Sanford Citizens on Patrol who was proud. He'd worked for, 20 years as a civil servant, doing it voluntarily, and he was just shocked. You know, he was very disturbed by the remark, and I think you remember that, don't you?
Well, I do, and I also clarified to that caller that Citizens on Patrol is a program that George was recommended for by Doris Singleton, the coordinator, and he turned it down. He did not want to be a Seminole
County. I actually heard that interview. I was listening to that interview that you guys did down in Orlando. I believe it was on the American Adversary show.
Correct.
When that call came in. But I think it's we're getting ready to take a break again.
Okay.
So, again, I'll set this question up because the wannabe cop thing, a couple questions that I've always had and I've asked on my program. When did it become a problem to want to take care of your neighborhood and to volunteer your time, number one? And number two, when did it become not a noble thing to want to be a cop? Wow. That's a problem, isn't it?
Exactly.
When we come back, we'll continue this fascinating discussion. We'll dig even deeper into the life of Robert, his family, his mother and father, and George Zimmerman. And we'll get some advice, legal advice from Jeff Dowdy here on the Armed American Radio Network when we return. Don't go away.
Hi, everybody. Mark Walters here. Folks, whether you carry a gun already or are even considering it, and this is very serious business, one of the most important steps that you can take is to join the nation's number one resource for the armed citizen, the United States Concealed Carry Association, the USCCA. They sponsor the show. You know who they are. Folks, now is the time to learn how to protect yourself, your family, your property, and your business with a concealed weapon, because you never know when you may need to. The USCCA is designed specifically for those of us who have chosen to take our personal defense very seriously. I've put together special membership offers for the Armed American Radio listeners, you, at jointheuscca.com. That's jointheuscca.com. Now is the time to join the USCCA and take advantage of the incredible resources available only at the USCCA. That's jointheuscca.com. These are troubling times in America, folks. Become a member today.
I found a small lump. It just didn't feel right. After a biopsy, I was told that it was cancer.
Last year, Kimalea Conrad was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer.
I was devastated. I felt alone. I began praying, God, how do I do this? Where do I do this? Cancer Treatment Centers of America was the place.
At Cancer Treatment Centers of America, faith and spiritual support play an important role in the fight against complex and advanced stage cancer.
When I walk in to CTCA, it feels like a place of life and hope.
Advanced medicine and technology, the warm embrace of the spirit, and the power of prayer. That's Cancer Treatment Centers of America, a national network of 5 cancer hospitals.
I am so grateful and so blessed that I went to Cancer Treatment Centers of America. I am strong and I am joyous.
If you or a loved one has complex or advanced stage cancer, visit cancercenter.com/faith. Cancer Treatment Centers of America, care that never quits. Appointments available now.
Jay Farner here with Quicken Loans. Here are 2 simple words that should make you reconsider waiting to buy a home. Buying power. Let's say you can afford a monthly mortgage payment, including principal and interest, of around $1,350. With today's rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage of 3.5%, APR 3.65%, that payment could support a $300,000 mortgage. But if you wait and rates tick up to around 6%, that same $1,350 mortgage payment, including principal and interest, may only be able to support a $225,000 mortgage. That's $75,000 worth of home that you're missing out on by waiting. That's buying power. And for 3 years in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Give Quicken Loans a call today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com and maximize your buying power.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Payment example excludes taxes and insurance. Calls for cost information. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was young and naive, and I found myself with $11,000 of credit card debt, 9 credit cards, and nothing to show for it.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-936-5496 to talk to a certified counselor.
And I ended up calling, and the lady on the phone was so nice. And it was really humbling because no one really knows what your financial situation is like. You have to open those doors.
Trinity will consolidate your bills, stop collections calls, wipe out late fees, reduce your interest, and improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
They gave me the right perspective, and they got the ball rolling, which is what I needed. I needed someone to help me get in the right direction.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-936-5496. That's 1-800-936-5496. Or visit mydebthasmedown.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Gallagher, and I'm filling my prescription for freedom on Armed American Radio with Mark Walters.
Welcome back to the Armed American Radio Network. I am Mark Walters. That was Mike Gallagher. We love Mike Gallagher. He's one of my favorite hosts. Shanto, down in Dallas, Texas. You've been awful quiet today, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful, and I haven't had the opportunity yet to introduce you to Robert Zimmerman, who's here in the Mobile Crossbreed Holster Studios. Robert, my producer, Sean, in Dallas.
Sean, nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks for being on the show.
And Jeff Dowdy, your attorney, yes, here in the Mobile Crossbreed Holster Studios as well. Jeff, my producer, Sean Shanto, as in Tonto.
Yeah, as in Tonto. Nice to meet you,
what
Sean.
We call
nice
it.
To meet you, too.
That was a moniker given to him by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who yes, we welcomed back from a break, and he said, it's great to be with you guys firing 44 caliber silver bullets of freedom across America's airways. So here we sit. Sean, I appreciate everything you're doing down there. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question and you want me to read it on the air, send me an email right now at mark@armedamericanradio.org, mark@armedamericanradio.org, and I will get to it within the next half hour. Feel free to send me an email. Again, that's mark@armedamericanradio.org. We'll go ahead and shut the phones down, Sean, because they will blow up. I'm sure you've probably already done that.
Yes. And I have a Robert, I just want to let you know that you and your family are in our my prayers.
Thank you.
It's, you know, this whole thing, I'm sad to see it turn the way it has been. The courts and the jury has spoken, and I knew he would be innocent even before, just because I've done a lot of research on the case myself, and so I know some of the facts that unfortunately the TV networks refuse to allow in there. So again, my heart and prayers are with you and your family.
Thank you, Shanto. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Shanto, I love it. It's absolutely beautiful. Let's go back to a line of questioning. Robert, I'll start with you again. And that is, when the story first broke, you guys were probably sitting there in utter disbelief that you were seeing what, quite frankly, in my many years of writing stories like this and seeking stories like this out, this was a clear-cut vanilla case of self-defense in my eyes. And I've written now my second book on these topics.
Right, right.
I was shocked when I saw this. Now, I can't imagine what you as a family were going through, and particularly your brother, when he saw this blowing up. And all of a sudden, here's this guy whose face is everywhere now, not just on the news, but global news. He's on Russian TV. He's on television in China. And he's seeing this, and people are talking about him, and his character is at stake.
Right.
And they're not even looking into his character, another topic we can cover.
They just use the word white.
Thank you.
That was all we needed to know about George Zimmerman, is that he was white.
Again, the media pushing this meme, and we'll go there in just a second. But when the story broke and it became big, and it became bigger, and it became even bigger, now we have NBC jump in the mix.
Right, right.
Now, George has told you a story about what happened.
Sure.
And here NBC plays a tape. Obviously, we find out after the fact it's doctored. What was going through your head, and how did he react?
I guess kind of the precursor to NBC playing the tape was us thinking as a family that once these tapes got out, George had told us he was screaming, and nobody came to help him. He told the police, I was screaming and screaming, and nobody would help me. That was his first utterance to law enforcement. We thought, finally, these tapes will come out. Now, it was the Martin family attorneys who sued to get them out. But at least when they're out, people will hear George screaming, and this will be over. You know, it'll be an open and shut case. Instead, the opposite happened. At first, I guess Tracy Martin couldn't identify that as his son, and then he could. And then there were other reports about people not being able to clearly identify who George was, despite our dad going and identifying and swearing under affidavit that it was his son's voice. So we thought there would be some relief there, but then what NBC did, once they had those calls, is selectively edit a fairly well-documented exchange between George and the dispatcher into a statement, something to the effect of, there's a guy here, he's acting real suspicious, he's black. You know, so there was the white man calling out the black, and that was the necessary, those were the necessary ingredients to get the white versus black train, you know, steamrolling ahead, full speed ahead. But others did it as well. You know, CNN with those tapes, first a show called The Young Turks. But later CNN had their, you know, alleged experts conclude conclusively that George was saying a racial slur. He was saying the word coon in the tape, which is just unbelievable because we just don't talk like that. You know, that's something we may have read in literature from the 50s, you know. But it's not something that we say. It's not something we use ever. Other networks like CBS joined in. They made these very misleading graphical representations of what had happened. They just had George walking down a sidewalk and some other individual and walking as well, and George just pulled out his gun and shot him, you know, and celebrities joined on board. ABC more recently selectively edited the last juror that spoke out. Her name, she goes by Maddie. believe she's juror B37, if I'm not mistaken. B29, as saying that she had suggested that George Zimmerman had gotten away with murder, when in reality she was simply replying by repeating Robin Roberts' question to her, that she would tell those people that if you think George Zimmerman has gotten away with murder, you can't get away from God.
Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, you can actually read that story. You can go over to The Blaze. The story is titled, Did ABC News Deceptively Edit Zimmerman Juror's Controversial Interview? An Unlikely Source is Calling Them Out, and read that for yourself. And we do have some questions coming in by email. We'll get to those later. The ABC, I actually was sent that by a regular contributor of the show, Sean. David Kodria sent me that.
Yeah.
Absolutely irate that the media was at it again.
Oh, absolutely.
And Jeff, let's go to you on this.
Sure.
Because you, as an attorney, you see these falsehoods continuing to grow. You see edited tapes by NBC. And I asked a question in a previous broadcast. Wouldn't it be a kind of a strategy to have the jury hear something maybe they weren't supposed to hear, knowing the judge is going to strike it, but knowing that the jury already heard it? Isn't that what happens with NBC? Do they know maliciously that, hey, let's just do this? Somebody made this decision.
Oh, yeah, you do that quite often in the courtroom, but this was before we even got to the courtroom. And when that happened, it just exploded. I'm a criminal defense attorney right in Seminole County, right in Sanford, and it just exploded after that NBC report. And, you know, the politicians got involved, and they basically shoved law enforcement aside, and it just escalated to pretty soon we were at Fort Mellon Park with Jesse Jackson speaking, you know, and just creating more and more hatred towards George. And we hadn't even seen a courtroom yet.
Has Al Sharpton ever met your brother?
No.
Has Jesse Jackson ever met your brother?
No, he has not.
Has Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, or for that matter, President Obama, reached out to talk to your family?
Not that I'm aware of.
So you've got no voicemail messages and no phone calls from any of those people?
No. I should say, though, that NBC is in a particularly strange situation with Al Sharpton, because they have taken, under the guise of journalism, the approach of advocacy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what Al Sharpton does. But he's also touted as some kind of news anchor. And I think that's a very slippery slope. A lot of journalists will tell you the same thing. They avoid it. If you advocate, your journalism is ineffective. If you're trying to be objective as a journalist, you can't really advocate, so they're kind of incompatible. But I think NBC felt bound to the narrative that Al Sharpton was spinning, and he came. He's not rebutted. He's someone in our society that can say anything he wants.
Oh.
And no one can rebut him.
He has not apologized for the Tawana Brawley incident and the lives he damaged many, many years ago. And, Sean, you know that as well.
Absolutely.
So please go ahead.
Well, he's responsible. To this day, this mythology seems to permeate that he, George, was told not to get out of his vehicle and defied police instructions. Well, you can strip that word for word from everything that I've seen from Al Sharpton here in Sanford. He started at community town hall meetings telling this to the public that, you know, in defiance of the police, he got out of his truck and continued to follow. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, people hear him. He knows that, and he says whatever he wants. It's a blatant lie. We know better now. If he didn't know at the time it was a lie, he certainly knows that today. Anyone with ears who hears that audio tape would know that. But, you're just not able to rebut certain people, I guess, in our society.
Well, clearly there's a political agenda at play here, and clearly these are masters of exploitation, of tragedy, to further their own political gain at the expense of, unfortunately, what you're finding out of someone else's life. And in this case, it's your family's, it's your brother's. Right. Armed American Radio continues after this. We'll go to Jeff Dowdy. I want to ask you some legal questions.
Sure.
Okay. And we want to talk about Stand Your Ground, too, something that had nothing to do with the case, but
right,
sure is under attack. I'm Mark Walters. Armed American Radio continues right after this. Okay, now we're going to talk about how you can get prepared to defend yourself and your family in a worst-case scenario. All of you know I'm a huge fan of Rob Pincus and his work with the Personal Defense Network. Well, the Personal Defense Network has assembled a series of revolutionary handgun training videos designed to make you more efficient with a defensive firearm in the context of a dynamic critical incident. This training course, which is only $39.95, offers more than 3 solid hours of powerful, practical, and proven techniques
techniques that will increase your speed and efficiency. Some of the topics covered include things like the balance between speed and precision, one-handed and weak-handed reloads, and, of course, shooting around a corner. So to get a copy of this one-of-a-kind training course and to help support Armed American Radio, visit ArmedAmericanDVDOffer.com. Once you order, you'll get the 3-DVD training course for only $39.95 plus shipping and handling. This is a great deal. Check it out. Again, go to ArmedAmericanDVDOffer.com and get your copy today.
Ever wish you could find a concealed carry holster that allows wearing the clothing of your choice with absolutely no restrictions on body movements? A concealed carry holster that provides such deep concealment that no one will know you're carrying unless you tell them. The world-famous Smart Carry Holster does just that, while providing complete invisibility, total comfort, and freedom of movement, even when carrying a full-size handgun. Make your gun disappear in total comfort today. Visit smartcarry.com now.
Finally, ladies and gentlemen, a 22 Magnum pistol with a 30-round capacity magazine. You heard me right. The Kel-Tec PMR-30 is a lightweight, full-size pistol chambered in 22 Magnum with a double-stack magazine. With a crisp single-action pull and fiber-optic sights, the Kel-Tec PMR-30 is perfect for small game or target shooting. To see it for yourself, visit KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. K-E-L-T-E-C Weapons.com.
One of the few guns that fits comfortably in your pocket, the North American Arms Guardian 32 ACP is the perfect combination of small size, high quality, and great stopping power. Convenient, reliable, and very effective. North American Arms stands behind the Guardian 32 ACP with a lifetime warranty. With standard capacity of 6+1 rounds in a pistol less than 4 inches in length, the Guardian ACP ships with 2 magazines and offers an optional 10-round capacity extended magazine. For more information, visit NorthAmericanArms.com. That's NorthAmericanArms.com.
The Ruger 10/22 Takedown. A new take on the legendary Ruger 10/22. With all of the features and functionality of America's favorite rimfire rifle, the Ruger 10/22 Takedown easily separates for convenient storage and transportation. Reassembly is simple and returns the rifle to zero, ensuring precision shot after shot. Packed in a backpack-style bag included with the rifle, the Ruger 10/22 Takedown makes it easy to keep America's favorite rimfire by your side.
Armed American Radio has joined forces with Gander Mountain and Gander Mountain Academy Firearms Training Centers. Gander Mountain is America's largest retail network of outdoor supply stores and one of the nation's largest retailers of firearms and shooting supplies, staffed with world-class instructors, virtual shooting ranges, indoor live fire ranges, and 180 and 300 degree simulators. Gander Mountain Academy provides the ultimate firearms training experience. For a list of locations, visit gandermountain.com/academy now.
Galco's patented new V-Hawk tuckable inside-the-waistband holster reaches unheard-of heights in comfort, speed, stability, and versatility. Constructed of premium steer hide, the V-Hawk comes complete with leather belt loops and tuckable injection-molded hooks. The open-top design offers both speed and ease of draw, and the reinforced mouth offers one-handed return to the holster. Buy the V-Hawk from Galco at GalcoGunLeather.com today. That's GalcoGunLeather.com.
This is Armed American Radio, filling your prescription for freedom every week, giving you a voice. Now, your host, Mark Walters.
Welcome back to the mobile, Sean, the mobile Crossbreed Holster Studios. You got to love that, don't you?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Say it, absolutely.
Well, my mic is so low, I can't.
My rental car is not a Prius, brother. I have to ask you this question because the story just recently broke about your brother saving a family, pulling them from a burning vehicle or an overturned SUV down in Orlando, Florida?
Yeah, it was overturned, and he suspected it might catch fire. He went with his...
Clearly, that was a setup, and clearly there was a production company involved with Universal Studios. How much did that cost you?
A lot of money. Yeah.
It was an exorbitant fee, wasn't it?
Right, right.
I'm assuming that it was probably either the Disney Studios or Orlando or the Universal, which are right down the road. I know the area well. So you got Disney Studios on one side, Universal on the other, right?
Right, and it's a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't tell you.
Okay. All right. The fact of the matter is your brother saved a family. The family came forward, and unfortunately, I guess, I don't like to use the word chickened out, but got together as a family and decided your brother's too toxic. We don't want to say anything positive about George Zimmerman for fear.
I totally respect their decision. I can understand it completely. I mean, they had before this, before they even came forward or attempted to come forward through George's attorney, Mark O'Meara, they had pictures of their children published online. And we've always been very clear to draw the line that, you know, kids are off limits. But they had private family pictures posted. The nature of the media scared them, and I completely understand.
No question about it, particularly when they saw what was happening, and that's why they did. Have they said anything publicly since? I think they did issue a statement. Is anybody aware?
A very, very limited, right, through Mark O'Meara, who just clarified why they did not want to come on the air.
It was, and
the
confirming that, in fact, it was your brother.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Well, yeah, that's an amazing story, and to see the haters.
Mm-hmm.
Who just don't care about the facts at all,
yep. Right.
Come out and make those ludicrous comments that this was somehow staged and, yep. And everything else. And Sean, you wanted to say something. I hear you jumping in there.
Yeah. Well, Robert, one thing I wanted to know, and I've heard this. Now, your brother had done some things, you know, for children that needed help and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure.
Some
there was
charity work.
Right. There was a community program that was funded, I believe it was through Seminole County.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mentoring program, and there's different ways in every community to volunteer, but they, George and his wife, chose mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
The program was funded for between 8 and 11 months, something like that, but then the funding ran out,
mm-hmm.
And it was, you got a stipend. It was like, I don't know, it was like $40 a day or something like that for gas money and to take these kids somewhere,
mm-hmm.
And do something positive with them every other week, and when the funding ran out, George decided that despite the lack of funding, he would take it upon himself, and so did Shelley,
mm-hmm.
to continue to mentor these two African-American children. Their father is serving a life sentence in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a tremendous way to kind of break that cycle of incarceration. It's a problem I've heard of. It's
yes.
been cited a lot about the African-American population being overly represented in incarceration. And I think that was one of the great ways to break the cycle. It's not something the mainstream media wants to talk about.
Yeah.
And protecting those children's identities. We got asked many times, who are the children? Can we see a picture?
Mm-hmm.
Anything. And of course, we'd never, ever mm-hmm. release or disclose mm-hmm. anything that would identify them. But it's
and
true.
I'm sure you've probably even called a liar about that from others.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, it's incredible. Sean, go ahead.
I just wanted, because I had heard that, and I wanted to make sure that that was out there, because, again, the media hasn't talked about that aspect of what type of man George is. He's a caring man, and he's trying to mentor, and that's something that we do need as men. And you know, they don't have someone mentored me, because my father wasn't there, and that helped out a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, Sean, that's powerful.
Yeah.
And you know, we can actually, that's a good topic of conversation. You guys can stick around for the next hour for a little bit?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that. I want to ask you about George, then I want to get to Stand Your Ground before this hour closes out. What was it like growing up with George? Was he a good kid or a bad kid?
I plead the fifth. No, he was good. We were very close, but we always got annoyed when people confused us for the other brother. So
right.
If people called me George, I'd snap back. I'm not George. That's George. You know,
you guys look alike. I'll tell you that. There's a huge resemblance.
Right, right. And definitely he's put on a little weight since this whole thing happened. But before, when we were in the hospital with our grandma and our dad, the nurses there and the doctors would routinely confuse us. And one of us would spend the whole night. The next one would spend the whole day. They'd come in the next day and say, what are you still doing here? You know, and we have to explain to them, no, that was my brother. And people just wouldn't believe it because they thought we were the same person. But, yeah, we did everything as a team. You know, we served in church as a team. We went on retreats as a team. We went with our mother to do public or community service things, like mm-hmm. helping out with immigration and things like that as a team. We were routinely addressed as the boys growing up in Manassas, Virginia. And if you say the Zimmerman boys in Manassas, a lot of people will know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the story of your brother's character isn't coming out. And we want it to come out.
Absolutely.
We want you to have the opportunity to talk about that and give that perspective that the mainstream media simply, A, doesn't care about, isn't asking about, has no intention of asking about, and if they did, would probably lie
right.
about the conversation, as you well know now, unfortunately. But other than just normal stuff, no problems. He wasn't the type of kid get suspended and was in a lot of trouble all the time, just kid stuff.
Yeah, to your point about the mainstream media, they looked for that. They did go to Manassas. They did go to our hometown. They ran me out of work by sending camera crews to all of the places that I had worked at looking for me. They looked up and down our street, our former employers, people that knew us, to find anything negative they could say about George. You know, and the pastor of the church we attended for our whole lives in Manassas called us generous people. You know, I'm not sure exactly what his words were, but leaders. Mm-hmm. Same thing with our mom. She worked for the courts. Our dad was a retired magistrate, and they looked far and wide to find anything out negative that they could about George. But as soon as they found the opposite was true, the reporting was done.
Well, that seems opposite Jeff Doughty, doesn't it, from some of the reporting on the Trayvon Martin side, doesn't it?
He was an altar boy.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He was.
Right.
They're not reporting. Did they do the same thing? Do you know? Did they go to Trayvon's neighborhood? Did they go down to Miami? Did they dig into his background? Do you know?
I do not. I'm not aware of anything of that nature.
Eve, I don't know if they did. They wouldn't have. There's a lot of facts in this case that were never brought up.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I don't want to go into that right now. Time, too, of the essence. Let's talk about Stand Your Ground very quickly. And since we have you for another hour, we'll be able to get into some of these emails we're getting. I'm a little bit familiar with Florida law, longtime resident of Florida.
Right.
And used a firearm, didn't have to fire a shot in defense of my life before Stand Your Ground was law, but I'm very well aware of self-defense. Can you explain why Stand Your Ground is now a political hot-button issue in Florida when it was never part of this case to begin with?
That just befuddles me. I don't understand that. As you know, Stand Your Ground is a law that was passed by Senator Simmons years ago, right here in Orlando. That's where he's from. And it says you don't have a duty to retreat. Stand Your Ground was not used in the Zimmerman case. Stand Your Ground would be a court hearing before the judge. And Mark O'Meara and Don West chose not to do that, probably because they didn't think the judge would grant it.
Right.
I mean, it was too politicized. This case was too politicized. Judge Nelson was going to grant it, in their opinion.
And they felt in that case, undoubtedly, that if it was denied, which they felt it probably would have been, that it could have prejudiced, have been prejudicial to any
and
jury.
George would have had to get up there and testify again. Right. You know, they already had all the videos that he did his interview.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're getting ready to close out here in just a second. We're gonna keep you guys here. We're gonna go to some emails, and maybe Sean will even open up a phone call or two. We'll check with you on that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mark Walters. You've been listening to the Armed American Radio Network. And I tell you this when I close out every hour, right about this time. Remember, carry on, carry often, and carry absolutely everywhere. Never leave your cave without your club. Don't be that unarmed caveman. More with Robert Zimmerman, George Zimmerman's brother, and his attorney, Jeff Doughty, when Armed American Radio returns after this.
You've been listening to Armed American Radio Network with your host, Mark Walters. Armed American Radio, brought to you each week by the United States Concealed Carry Association. To learn more about Armed American Radio, log on to armedamericanradio.org.
Here I come again now, baby, like a dark wind. Jealous me by the
folks, you paid a king's ransom to send your kids to the finest colleges. Now they've graduated, and guess what? They can't find a job. You've already invested in their education. Now invest in their careers. Start a business that your adult children can run and flourish in. You hear it here. Give your children the break in life they really need using money you already have. Just call my friend Steve Cooper at ersop.com, the Entrepreneur Rollover Stock Ownership Plan.
Thanks, Hugh. We've helped countless people use their retirement money to invest in businesses for themselves and their family. It only takes a couple of weeks to finance, and it's totally legal.
Trust ersop.com to help you start a small, profitable business that could give your adult children a head start. Turn your family's fortunes around using your own money legally with no debt or payments. Call 866-MY-ERSOP. That's 866-MY-ERSOP. Call 866-MY-ERSOP. That's 866-MY-ERSOP. 866-MY-ERSOP.
Trinity.
If credit card debt has you down, nonprofit Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your bills into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, stop collections calls, wipe out late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. You'll pay thousands less than you originally owed. It's not a loan. It's a way to become debt-free and improve your credit score. So call the Trinity Debt Relief Hotline at 1-800-936-5496. They'll explain their proven program to you with no pressure, just practical solutions and hope for tomorrow. Are you ready to pay off your credit cards in less time for less money? Then call for a free no-obligation debt analysis and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-936-5496. That's 1-800-936-5496. Call now or visit MyDebtHasMeDown.com.
Trinity.
1-800-936-5496.
I mentioned that we have your attorney here as well, sitting to your left, and that's Jeff Dowdy. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having us tonight.
Yes.
Very,